Australia is a signatory to a number of international conventions and treaties around nuclear issues, and that's precisely to control exactly how any uranium that we may export gets used, i.e. it's used for peaceful nuclear power purposes and not for military use in things like nuclear weapons. So so there's a whole range of issues there, but fundamentally that our safeguard system, if we remove that from our federal environmental law, there's no transparency over Australia's export process and so on. So I think it's vital that we keep that transparency and that public assessment in place.
So do the Minerals Council want to remove the federal approval process, do they?
The Minerals Council, to explain, I guess, the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act, or the EPBC Act, is the main piece of federal legislation where the Australian government uses that to assess projects that could affect anything that's important environmentally at a national or international level.
Yep.
So things such as World Heritage Areas, Ramsar listed wetlands or wetlands of international importance, of which Australia has many around around the country, as well as issues such as our cultural heritage and things like that. And so nuclear actions and uranium mining are one of those matters specified in the EPBC. And so the Minerals Council has basically put a submission into the EPBC review, which is undergoing a 10-year statutory review. They've argued that actually we should get rid of that sort of special treatment of uranium because state environmental approvals processes already cover off a lot of the environmental issues associated with uranium. But they don't cover off issues around the export and the requirements for Australia to meet all of our international obligations as being part of that international nuclear fraternity, I guess. So certainly that's what they're arguing. I think they're wrong.
Yeah, well, it's a unique mineral, isn't it, uranium?
No other mineral can lead to a weapon of mass destruction such as a nuclear weapon. So you can't do that with gold, you can't do that with lead or nickel or iron ore at all. So I think there is very special reasons why we need to be very, very careful about uranium.
It's also the end of life of a uranium mine, though fundamentally difficult to rehabilitate at the end of a uranium mine's life. And you say in the article, in your 24 years of research, never seen a successful case study.
No, and I think every site we can point to different problems. There's, if we look at Mary Kathleen, and Mary Kathleen was rehabilitated with at least a sort of a modern approach to sort of mine rehabilitation. But there was expected to be minimal seepage coming out from the tailings dam. That seepage wasn't expected to be toxic or acidic drainage, and there wasn't expected to be any uptake of heavy metals into the surrounding or the overlying vegetation, such as grasses.
Well, and it is.
There was also expected to be no erosion. Now, only the erosion assumption has actually proven correct. Like the tailings dam cover has been physically stable, but there is uptake of heavy metals and radionuclides into grass. There is acidic drainage occurring from the tailings, and that there is a significant amount of seepage that escapes the tailings. So I think some of these assumptions that were made back in the 1980s, I think are certainly not held true with the passage of time.
What about some other of the rehabilitation sites? How are they going?
Well, if you look at Narbarlek, and Narbarlek is a mine that was rehabilitated about a decade after both Mary Kathleen and Rumjungle, and it was just a small uranium mine in the western side of Arnhem Land there, but we know that there's been problems with erosion of the covers there, and that's exposed underlying radioactive material and caused hotspots that have needed to be fixed. We also know there's still a lot of weeds on the site. There's still infrastructure on the site that was supposed to have been removed but still hasn't. And the site was heavily impacted by cyclones just over a decade ago. So I think there's still a lot of ongoing issues with Narwhal, and it's certainly not the shining example. Now, the Ranger uranium mine, for example, is certainly undergoing extensive works at the moment, and it's probably 100-fold bigger in scale than the Narbarlek, for example. But it will take many, many years to complete those sort of works. But Ranger sits on Indigenous land that's actually surrounded by a World Heritage Area, and it's upstream of a wetland of international importance. So it's absolutely fundamental that we get the rehabilitation of Ranger right. And I think Rio Tinto deserve credit for the fact they've actually stayed the course on that. They've put up a lot of money and they haven't cut and run, which is often what we see big mining companies do when mines are making a loss. So I think, despite the issues with Rio's activities elsewhere, especially in Western Australia, I guess, but certainly at Ranger, I'm happy to publicly say they do deserve credit because they have stayed there. They're making sure that money is spent and the work is done. So and there's some issues around, I suppose, funding the research around that, but certainly, I think just from a high-level point of view, I think Rio do deserve credit for making sure Ranger, the work gets done.
Well, okay. Well, that's a bit of a tick there. That's good to hear.
Credit where credit's due.
So uranium mining is set to be outcompeted by other minerals, like lithium has now overtaken uranium in export revenue. Is uranium mining an export, a dying industry?
Well, I think if you look at the sort of the transitions that are happening globally, and I've done some really detailed review work on this over the last sort of year or two, mm-hmm. what we're seeing is a massive surge in demand for lithium, and that's going to continue. We know that that's for energy storage batteries, the likes of which have been built at Hornsdale in South Australia, but are starting to be built elsewhere. The Agnew Gold Mine in Western Australia, for example, has got a very large integrated renewable energy system now that incorporates large-scale energy storage batteries as part of that. So I think we're going to see an explosive demand for lithium continue, and there'll be little issues with the price, and certainly that's we're seeing that with some of the lithium market at the moment, where Western Australia has gone from one operating lithium mine, say, a decade ago, to eight as of a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Right? And what we're seeing is that's now of the order of $1.6, $1.8 billion worth. And I think the 2019 values were a bit lower than that. But uranium is of the order of $600 million. So now it might be slightly higher or lower some years, but certainly what we're seeing is this great energy transition for not only energy storage batteries, but for lithium, what we're seeing is that one of the big demands in the future will, of course, be electric vehicles. And so they're going to be seeing multiple-fold growth in lithium over the next couple of decades. And so with nuclear power, it's capped, and it's been flat and largely, when you're looking at a share of global electricity, it's halved over the last sort of 20, 25 years. So it's nuclear power, it basically takes a long time to build, it's very expensive, and it's just not as nimble in the current energy market. And so I think, despite the fact that when you're looking at it from a carbon point of view, nuclear power certainly has a similar carbon emissions to renewables, but it's much, much more expensive to build, takes a lot longer, and we still face the issues with reactor safety, we still face the issues of what to do with nuclear waste when we're finished, and we're still faced with the fundamental conundrum that nuclear power programs is exactly how North Korea got its nuclear weapons, exactly how Israel, India, Pakistan, Iran is well on that pathway, and there's a lot of international concern about exactly how far Iran has progressed. So the whole link between nuclear power programs and nuclear weapons is fundamental, and that's been a major concern in proliferation circles for decades. So you just don't have that with renewables. I think that's the sort of energy transition that we're really seeing. I'm very optimistic about all of that.
So according to the WA Department of Mines Industry Regulation and Safety, for uranium projects that receive state ministerial approval under the formal Liberal National Government will be allowed to progress. Do you know much about this, and do you know the current status of these particular mines, and should they go ahead?
Well, the legal arguments, I guess, I'll leave for whether it's politicians or others, but certainly at the moment the uranium price is flat, and it's very, very difficult to make any money off uranium at the moment. And I think the fact that despite the approvals that have been in place now for many years, including some like Kintyre and Yeelirrie that have been around for a long time in terms of their approvals, the projects are still not to progress. So they're still waiting to be constructed and developed. And so I think in reality, I think the economics of these projects are very, very difficult at the moment. Australia is finding it very difficult to compete with countries such as Kazakhstan, which allows in-situ leach uranium mining, no groundwater restoration to the sort of standards we would normally expect, say, in Australia. And we just can't compete with such cheap uranium, and so it's very difficult. And I think at the moment, certainly the Western Australian projects face an uphill battle, but they also face a lot of Indigenous concern, community concern, and we'll see where all that ends up.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Gavin Mudd.
My pleasure.